It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Ski swap time is here. It's become a season in Anchorage when used gear comes out of the garage for these giant rummage sales. People get excited and will even rush in to be the first to grab bargains. You'd think that you have to be there or lose out, but is this really a good way to get quality gear? Not if you get something that doesn't fit or has problems. On today's show, we're talking about ski swaps and used gear in general. You can save a ton of money on skis or a board if you know what to look for and find stuff that fits, but you have to be careful. And we have experts in the studio today to talk about both Nordic and Alpine gear. The swaps are starting this weekend, and it's like the next week or so, there's a whole bunch of opportunities to buy used gear or get rid of your used gear here in Anchorage. And with us, we have Eric Helmbrecht, who's with the Powderhound Ski Shop in Girdwood and is a boot fitter, knows how to get boots to fit you perfectly. Thanks for being with us, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
And Tamara Cornfield, who is the new operations director at the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. Thanks for being with us, Tamara.
Glad to be here.
And your Nordic swap is coming right up.
Yeah, it'll be on Saturday, October 18th.
All right. And so how to explain how a ski swap works for those who are like, ski swap, what does that mean?
Okay. So what you can do is if you have gear in your garage, for example, and you're running to get rid of it, you can come from 1 to 3 on Saturday and drop off the gear, and then we'll sell it for you. And if you're looking for gear, if you're interested in getting into the sport or you kind of just want to peruse the options, you can show up from 4 to 6 and search for boots, poles, or skis, as well as some clothing. And we have all those options for you.
Okay. And what sort of stuff comes out of the closet? I mean, is it what sort of gear? Do you find high-performance gear? Do you find beginner gear? Or is it the whole span of what people might need?
Yeah, it's the whole span. Sometimes we do get, you know, racers who have just finished their racing career trying to get rid of their fleet of skis. So they have really good skis, you know, top of the line. You can tell that they have their name on it when you show up and are looking at their pair of skis.
Uh-huh.
And then we also...
those go quickly.
Yeah, they do. we also have, yeah, the rock skis that people are just getting rid of. Maybe they're wooden skis. People are trying to get for the wooden ski classic.
Oh, yeah.
Those are usually at the bottom of the basement and come out for the ski swap.
But for people who want to be in that wooden ski classic, that's kind of a treasure to grab because they're hard to get anymore,
right?
Yeah,
it's hard to find wooden skis these days, as well as, you know, the three-pin binding. That'll give you a lot of points in the wooden ski classic.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So how much money can you save? I mean, what do you, in terms of comparing to new, how much money do you expect to save?
So if you were looking just for, you know, to get into the sport and you were going to buy rock skis, for example, you could save, you know, $100 or more just going and getting a pretty inexpensive pair of skis just to try it out. If you're getting the top of the line, you can still save a good amount of money, but it's going to be more difficult to find the right pair.
Because you're going to be wanting to look for there's no point in buying a high performance ski if it doesn't flex perfectly for your body, because you're just going to be wasting money, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So you have, you know, skate technique and you have classic technique, and both you need the right flex for your weight. So skis are actually sold based on your weight as well as your height. And the best thing you can do is to go into a ski shop to have that figured out for you. If you already know those, then yes, you can go to the ski swap and figure it out. And we will have ski instructors there. So if you have, you know, basic questions, we have people who can help you buy the right stuff for you.
Mm-hmm. So how does this work out for the ski association? People drop their stuff off. Do you take a cut of the sales?
Yeah, a 20% consignment fee. And then that just allows us to sell everything in one go, as opposed to you know, standing with your stuff and trying to sell it.
Uh-huh. And so then if it doesn't sell, you just have to come pick it up.
Yeah. Yep. From 7 to 8:30 that night, if we don't sell it, please pick it up or else we'll donate it to charity.
Okay. So Eric Helmbrecht from the Powderhound Ski Shop down in Girdwood, how does the Alpine swaps, I think, are your Nordic swap is in that bunker at Kincaid. It's really not that big, but some of these Alpine ones are huge, right?
Yeah, they get pretty enormous. People can be waiting for an hour outside wrapped around the corner to just get in so they get the first shot at the good stuff, because there's definitely a fine line between the equipment worth buying and the equipment that's there for a reason, and it's been there maybe for the last couple of years without selling.
Right. So when the doors open and you go in, there could be some just outrageous bargains on nearly new kind of equipment.
Yes, a lot of the gear, some of the best stuff you get are maybe purchased on a pro deal or from shop employees that used it for one season. It's the top of the line, maybe even a $2,000 setup that you can get for $400, $500. That is in great condition. That stuff goes really quick. And if you don't know what size or what width or what type you're looking for, then it can also be a terrible purchase, even if you're getting a great deal on it.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, there's a certain amount of expertise required in terms of, if you're a beginner, no point in rushing in at the beginning because you're not really going to know what you're looking for, right? Or you need somebody to go with you to help you out.
Yeah, a lot of people bring friends that are in the industry or know a little bit about it, or maybe they just read a lot on the internet and think they know a lot about it. But the best way to do it is to find someone that's there. If it's a race coach, you know, they usually know what they're talking about. If it's someone like myself from a ski shop that's helping out with intentions to sell the gear from the ski shop, but also there's no issue selling other people's gear and just getting people set up the right way, because the last thing we want is to see people struggling on the mountain with the wrong gear because they got it for $50 instead of, you know, $200.
Right. So why would a ski shop get involved in this? Because I think that like used gear is kind of undercutting new gear to some extent, no?
Yes and no. We do a lot of repairs and we fix boots of all ages. So when people bring in gear, it can bring us business. Definitely see a lot of swap gear come through the shop in the fall after it is purchased. Want to get things sized up, want to get footbeds for it, want us to just tell them if it's the right gear or not. And a lot of times we have to say no, not because we want to, just because we want to be honest with the customer and they'll know what to look for better next time. But we do see a lot of stuff in the tune shop. And the main thing is that we are able to get rid of a lot of previous year's gear that we didn't maybe sell out last spring. And we can get rid of it at the swap at a decent price for the customer, but at the same time, hopefully the right gear for them. So you're not getting a customer to a $900 boot for cheap and it's a terrible boot
right
for them.
So then you're also not selling stuff in your own shop for a ridiculously low price that's keeping people from buying the newer.
Exactly. Yeah. Stuff. Especially yeah. In our shop, we have a tiny square footage in our shop. So if we don't sell out 1 year, it's not like we have a lot of room to kind of keep old inventory on the shelves.
It's got to be, I've noticed that with the ski shops that it's got to be quite the challenge, because the time frame when you can sell stuff is pretty short. And, you know, even if you go into one of the shops here in Anchorage that sells Nordic gear, I mean, it could be pretty late into the fall. And if it's not snowing, there's nobody there. And then it snows and the place is flooded with people. And then Christmas comes and like, boom, no more skis being sold.
Yeah.
And so it's a really brief time period when all these sales are taking place. So you've got to figure out what your inventory is going to be. And you're not going to be able to restock that easily, right? Because it's such a short season.
Correct. So last year we kind of had a banger December. Everybody was coming down, getting pumped on winter and getting fit for boots, getting setups for their kids. And then the rain kicked in. We got 10 inches of rain in Girdwood in about
January
10 days.
January was a nightmare. Yeah.
We had green grass in front of the shop and it happened right after we placed all our reorders. Mm. So all that stuff's in or out to fill the shelves and the snow's gone. Luckily, the spring kind of came back and we did all right in the spring, so we didn't sit on a ton of inventory all summer, but it's definitely a gamble every single year.
Yeah. So why does the gear change so much from 1 year to the next? I mean, because
marketing.
It's not like, I know there are technological improvements that happen, but in 1 year, it's probably not the huge change, right?
No, exactly. So a lot of the skis that we are actually bringing to the swap this year that are brand new, unskied, undrilled, they are the exact same as this year's model with a different color on the top sheet or a little different design. Uh-huh. So we keep some of those in the store so people have an option to get a little bit better deal. But like you said, we need to sell the stuff new that's in the store as well. So we have to bring it to the swap. But yeah. Technology does change every few years, or every year one company is doing something a little different. This year, Nordica came out with a killer new ski. It's called the Energy Series, and it is an incredibly fun ski, easy to ski. Anybody can ski on it. And I don't think that'll change for a while. So these companies get into these little genres of, okay, this is what we're with now. It skis well. Rossignol has had the same shape for almost 7 years. And I think it's about time for them to change. And when they do, it'll be a big revolution. Everybody gets into these kind of slumps where they really enjoy the type of ski they make, the companies do. Mm-hmm. And then once they kind of have to catch up with everyone else, then it happens. And but otherwise, the technology in the last 5 years hasn't come too far.
Yeah. Yeah. Although if you haven't bought new skis in quite a while, it's kind of like if I'm driving around a 20-year-old car, you know, and I rent a car on a trip, I was like, whoa, this is incredible, you know. And it's the same thing with you know, when you'd rent sort of high performance skis. I mean, you just, the skiing is amazingly different.
Huge difference.
And somebody who is like not done a lot of downhill skiing in a few years, try it out. It's like, it is truly revolutionary.
It is. Yeah. We demo a lot of skis in the winter just because people want to try out some of the new stuff, and they're coming off of skinny skis at 210 centimeters long, and we get them into something a little newer, and they are blown away after a couple runs of getting used to a shorter ski, but blown away at the technology.
And it makes skiing a lot easier to learn as well.
Yes, it does.
It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about ski swaps, and we got a whole bunch of them coming up. A lot of equipment is going to be changing hands over the next couple of weeks between folks who have it piled up in their garages and want to get rid of it. And I actually need to do that. You know, it's amazing how much room a lot of skis take. I have 4 kids, so I've got a lot of skis. And so opportunities to get some good deals, but you also have to be careful to make sure you get the right equipment. So we've got 2 guests with us. Eric Helmbrecht, you were just hearing from, is a boot fitter at the Powder Hound Ski Shop. And Tamara Kornfield is the operations director at Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. I guess they have changed their setup now. They used to just have an executive director, but now they have 2 people to do that job. So that organization is growing as well.
Yeah. And I'm actually the program director.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Program director. Well, that's slightly different, but you've got a lot of programs that you guys
do.
Yeah. So you're doing the ski swap. Your annual meeting's coming up soon.
Yep. It'll be on November 1st.
Okay. And that's a big potluck. Tell us about that.
Yeah. It's a great opportunity to come out from 4 to 6. We have booths. So they're information booths on clubs, events going on this winter. We've had the speed skaters come out before. We have our biathlon people do little workshops to show you what biathlon can be like. We have all the races. The AMH Anchorage Cup kind of tells you what races are coming up, as well as the SCAN, the Ski Kincaid All Night, and a bunch of others. So that's from 4 to 6, and you can find out about those. And then after that, at 6 o'clock is when the dinner starts, and it's a potluck-style dinner. And we provide the bratwurst for the entree and desserts. And then after that, we have the annual meeting, and we just talk about what a great year we had last year for Nordic skiing, and all the upcoming things for this next year, and we go through all of that.
All right. And the programs that Nordic Ski Association has, for those who don't know, I mean, you're the ones who are pretty much grooming almost all the trails in Anchorage. There's a few bike trails that are groomed by the municipality.
Yeah, we groom all of Hillside and all of Kincaid, and then the Muni does the connecting of that, the tour trail, basically. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a lot of kilometers of trails.
And you put on the Junior Nordic program to teach kids to cross-country ski?
Yep, we have a Junior Nordic for kids from 6 to 14, and we also have lessons for adults as well as kids. Those are offered through us, and we have instructors for that. And we also have a biathlon program. They're Eagle Eyes for younger kids, and a master's program. And we also have ski jumping for young kids starting from ages 5 on up through 18, and an adult program for that as well. So if you want to learn how to ski jump, you should come on out.
All right. And I know that the ski club owns a tremendous number of skis too, because you provide skis, you rent out skis to all those hundreds and hundreds of kids doing Junior Nordic.
Yeah, we actually just put those in new racks, aka garbage cans, and yeah, there were hundreds of them. So those will go out pretty soon to all the kids who borrow them for the session.
And so do you have like volunteers who come in and tune up all these hundreds of skis and you know, scrape them and base wax and all that stuff?
Yeah, it's surprising how much of a beating those skis go through.
not really. Not if you watch the Junior Nordic kids, it's not surprising. Like, they'll go and ski right across the parking lot.
And you just cringe. But yeah. The bindings are probably the weakest part of a ski. Those kind of break over time. And so, yeah, we do have volunteers come in and help us replace the bindings. And then for the bases, we do wax them, initially. And then after that, I think we just kind of let them go with the flow and live their life.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's up to sort of the parent to make sure that the ski's got some kind of wax on it.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, the kick wax is, you know, the most important part for the kid as they're learning to classic ski. And then as they start to skate, they start to learn more about glide wax.
Yeah. So I'm always feel like there's a little bit of a choice to be made when you've got a youngster who's learning to ski. You don't want to like spend a huge amount of money on a ski that they're going to, you know, grow out of really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, really cheap skis, especially when we're talking Nordic, can be very frustrating. And sort of the desire and fun of skiing is maybe not really going to be there. And so maybe they're not going to catch on. And so listeners who don't know, if you're skiing classic, you have this zone on the ski that there's a camber. So it's up above the snow. And when you push down, you want that to contact the snow. And if the ski is too loose, it's just always going to be in contact and you're going to go really slow. And if the ski is too stiff, you're never going to be able to get the wax on the snow and it's going to be hard to go forward. So, I mean, it seems like that even for young kids, getting decent equipment is important.
Oh yeah. I helped coach with the Polar Cubs last year, and yeah, it's interesting to see the kids get really frustrated if the ski doesn't fit them right, especially if it's too long or yeah, like you said, they're getting too much kick or not enough. And they're not going to learn as fast. And I think the worst thing is they won't enjoy it as much. And then you see the kids whose equipment fits them and they love it, and you know that they'll probably ski forever.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's one of these things about learning a new sport is they say, how many times do you have to do it before it's fun, right?
Yeah.
A lot of sports are not fun the first few times, and skiing is one of those things where the better you get at it, the more fun it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for alpine as well.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So, Tamara, talk a little bit about how you determine if a Nordic ski fits or is the right flex for you.
Yeah. So the, like you said, with the cross country ski, that camber is really important. The flex, it can't be touching the surface of the snow while you're gliding forward. But then as soon as you put your weight on it, you want the ski to flatten out and hit the snow so that you can get that kick forward. And this is for classic skiing. And then for skate skiing, you also want a flex in the ski, because as you push off it, it kind of acts as a spring to kind of allow you to push off and go forward. And it keeps kind of a spring in your stride as you're going up hills, especially. And then it also helps with your glide on downhill. So going to a ski shop, they actually will let you stand on the ski, and you'll transfer your weight from ski to ski to see which ski best fits your weight, as well as your height is important. And that's the best way to figure out those.
Is there an opportunity to do that at the swap, or do you have like a bench set up for that?
Yeah, we will have a bench set up, but the swap is usually so chaotic that it's hard to find the time to do that. So it's actually best to know before going what kind of flex you're going to be looking at, and some skis do say it on them.
Yeah, though not always 100% accurate.
Right. Yeah, and I mean the flex actually stays for quite a while, you know, in the ski's mm-hmm. life, but it does start to fade over time. So if it is a very old pair of skis, yeah, it will have lost that camber.
And let's talk about the length of ski. Probably not as important as flex, but still important.
Yeah, for the skate ski, it's a little bit shorter. It kind of depends, but it's, you know, just a little bit above your height. And then a classic ski is much taller, extends quite a bit above your height. And yeah, and it just depends. And it's best to figure that out ahead of time.
Right. So if you hold your arm up, if it hits you right sort of at the wrist, that's about right.
Yeah. And I think that's best for kids. As you're an adult and you're finding that right pair of ski, it's not that important for that. But mm-hmm. yeah, for a kid, if you are looking for a classic pair of skis, you want it to be right below their wrist if their arm is extended overhead. And then for skate skis for kids, it's just about an inch or an inch and a half above their head.
Mm-hmm. So Eric, when we're talking about alpine skis and getting the right ski for the skier, it seems like it's maybe not as sensitive to the weight and size of the person. Is that true? Is it in a Nordic ski?
It is. It's just as sensitive.
Is
to it?
Okay. Yep. Let's hear about it.
And sure, you can go ski on anything that you find at the swap. And
well, when you go to the rental counter, they said, here you go.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, here's a ski the wrong size and a boot two sizes too big.
Right.
And people have fun doing that, but you'll have a lot more fun if you get the right gear. As far as skis go, you know, if you're a heavier person, say over 200 pounds, you definitely want to be looking for a ski that has some metal in it. If you're just beginning, it's not so crucial, but if you're wanting to progress in the sport, you definitely need a ski that can hold up to your weight.
So an internal structure?
Exactly.
I see.
Yep. So it's going to be a more rigid, stiffer ski, laterally, so torsional rigidity is kind of what we look for. And that's when you're on a hard pack and you're carving an edge. If that ski can't hold up to the force that it's needing to take, then you're not going to be getting the performance out of it that you can.
So you're not going to be able to cut as tight of a turn, or you're not going to, and also not as have as much control.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And as far as length goes, you know, we've seen a lot of changes in the last 30 years from ski length, but right now with rocker technology in the front, you can ski a little bit longer ski again than you were when the parabolics came out.
So explain that. That's probably going to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Explain rocker?
Yeah.
Okay. So rocker is, if you put the skis back to back and you look at the profile of it, or if you put one down on the ground, you can see where the tip or the tail or both start rising off of the ground, especially when your weight is on the ski.
Right.
And the first reason this came out was for float. So it kind of looks like a water ski. And what happens with that is you realize, okay, I can actually ski this on groomers as well if you have the rocker profile the same, well, if it makes sense. And if it's too much rocker, then you're losing that edge contact when you get it on its side edge.
Mm-hmm.
So rocker is very important. You don't really see any skis, even most carving skis, if they're not race skis that come out these days, do you have a little bit of rocker, or you call it early rise in the tip.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's doing is making the sport a lot easier to get into, a lot easier to turn. You're not getting the hook that you used to for tip and tail. You don't have to lift that upper ski when you're making a turn.
Right.
But at the same time, if
I was wondering about that, because I mean, the new skis, it's almost like you don't even have to think about.
Yeah, it's a little more buttery and smeary, and you can get a little sloppy but still have fun.
Yeah.
However, if you get the right ski for you, then you can still get real technical and have that racer's type edge.
So how do you, when you're evaluating like a customer, you're looking sort of how big they are, how muscular they are as well? I mean, like the strength, is that important?
Strength is one, but usually just weight alone, because gravity is doing all the work for skiing usually. Mm-hmm. And going edge to edge, it's just about how much that ski is going to flex. We always ask, you know, a bunch of questions to see how the people are getting around on the mountain. If, you know, an easy one is ask their favorite run. Mm-hmm. If they tell you it's Mighty Might, it's going to be a lot different if they say North Face,
right,
or, you know, Bear Cub Quad is their favorite chairlift to run on. So
right,
that's a really easy way to start judging how someone's going to react on skis and what you should start looking for.
So explain what the difference is between like a high performance ski that's going to be used by somebody who skis North Face as opposed to like, you know, an intermediate skier who's just sticking to the blue trails. I mean, what are the, is it going to be a stiffness issue or?
Yes and no. If you're sticking to blue trails but going very fast on them, you're going to want a stiff ski so it can hold up. Especially up here, our blues are more like blacks in most other states.
True, yeah.
So the stiffness, not necessarily. Width is definitely one. So if you're looking for a North Face ski, you're definitely going to be in that wider range, 100 plus millimeters underfoot. If you're sticking to groomers only, then you can go under 100 millimeters underfoot. You can even go down to 80-ish, you know, and still have a great day. But the skis these days are so functional in everything that they're making that we kind of, if a lot of people that come in ask for a one ski quiver, they say, what, I just want something that can do everything, because they ski with the kids, they ski the North Face, you know, every weekend they're getting out doing something different depending on the snow. And I always suggest something about as wide as your foot, which is roughly 100 millimeters wide. So anywhere between 90 and 105 maybe. And that lets them do everything while not using too much torque on their knees to get them over on each edge on the hard pack.
Right. So length, how does length relate to height of the skier?
Length, more height that you have in a ski, the more stable it's going to be at high speeds. So if you are going Mach 1 down waterfall or something, you're going to want a lot longer ski than if you want to turn a whole bunch and ski with the kids. So longer skis are harder to turn, but they're definitely a lot more stable.
Okay. And a bigger person, a taller person can handle a longer ski just because of their strength and this the weight balance that they're
exactly
dealing with.
Yep.
Okay. Is there a rule of thumb about that? Like, you know, like we were talking about the Nordic ski, like up to your, or is that too complicated?
It's too complicated because every ski now has a different profile on it. So if it does have a very exaggerated rocker profile, you can go way above your head. Not that it's necessary, but you're going to get the better edge contact that way. And that's mostly for expert skiers. But if you have a little bit of rocker in it, it's going to ski a little shorter if you need it to. So therefore, you can get away with a longer ski, which is going to make it more stable. If you're just beginning, you can get a shorter ski. In the shop, we fit people for a ski that they can ski on for 5 years, so they're not going to ski it out once they get, once they progress to a certain type of skier.
Now, it seems like this is really a lot to know if you are going to a swap and you're looking at skis that are from different time periods and they're different designs and different companies, and you know, sort of getting what's right for you is going to be very challenging, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. Magazines help a little bit. You know, you can read about what is running the best these days on most mountains. However, you can't trust a review for anything as far as Alaska snow compared to Utah snow, say. And again, you know, friends help. Friends that have been skiing for a long time and you're just trying to get into the sport, definitely get someone that knows their stuff. But it can be very confusing and very overwhelming because people get rushed into the doors, they see good prices, and they just want to buy because they think it's a good deal, when sometimes it's not a good deal at all.
Or not a good deal for them as an individual.
Yes. Yeah.
Good. Well, we've got a lot more to talk about. I've got many more questions, but we're going to take a break because we've been touting these ski swaps, and I want our listeners to know when and where they're taking place. So we're going to have a break and come back in a couple of minutes. And right now, we're going back to our old favorite, the Outdoor Explorer calendar. We used to do this as a feature on every show, and it's especially appropriate with today's topic. Our producer, Monica Goki, put this calendar together to give you the lowdown on the upcoming ski swaps. I'm Charles Woolforth. Stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
Hey Outdoor Explorers, we're bringing you a special edition of the Outdoor Explorer calendar for ski swaps. Alright, to start us off, the Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage hosts its annual ski swap this weekend at the Kincaid Bunker. Gear drop-off is on Friday night and Saturday morning, with the ski swap itself to kick off on Saturday, October 18th, from 4 to 6 p.m. For more information, check out AnchorageNordicSki.com. The Eagle River Nordic Ski Club is also hosting its annual ski swap this Saturday, October 18th. Folks can drop off their equipment from 8 to 9 a.m. at the Beach Lake Chalet. The swap runs from 9 to 11. For more information, check out ernsc.org. And the Girdwood Community Ski and Sport Swap is also happening this Saturday, October 18th, from noon to 4 p.m. at Alyeska's Day Lodge. 25% of all sales will go towards the Four Valleys Community Schools program. Check out fourvalleys.org, you have to spell out the four, for more information. And lastly, the AK Ski Swap has moved to UAA's new Alaska Airlines Center this year. It'll happen on Saturday, October 25th, from noon to 5 p.m. Gear drop-off is Friday night and Saturday morning. There will also be a film screening Friday night of Warren Miller's No Turning Back for you ski movie enthusiasts out there. For more information on the AK Ski Swap and film event, check out akskiswap.com. And that about wraps up the Outdoor Explorer Ski Swap calendar. You can find links to all these events and more on our website at alaskapublic.org.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Charles Woolforth, and today we are talking about ski swaps, used and new equipment, when to buy used, when to buy new, and how to go about it. As you just heard from Monica, there's an incredible variety of opportunities to buy used equipment coming up this weekend and over the next week. Our guests today are Eric Helm, Helmbrecht, who is a master boot fitter at the Powder Hound Ski Shop in Girdwood, and Tamara Kornfeld, who is with the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. I have had the misfortune to learn firsthand about rental boots, borrowed boots, boots that just didn't quite fit because I got an incredible closeout deal on them, both in the Alpine and Nordic field. And I actually almost went and got an operation on my foot because I've got a little knob that on my foot that is the area that always gets hot and always sort of gets the blisters. And then I found out that it'd be like 6 weeks to 2 months and I wouldn't be doing anything. And I said, okay, I'm just going to get better boots. It'd be make more sense to get good boots than to, you know, be out of commission for two months and have an operation. Tamara, do you sell used boots at the Nordic Swap? And it seems like boots are the sort of the one thing that really gets the most wear, especially in cross-country skiing.
Yeah, I agree. Boots, I think, have the shortest lifespan of all cross-country ski gear. And yeah, there are definitely used boots there. There are some new boots, and you can, you know, luck out and find a really great pair of boots. But in general, I think that's the one, you know, touchy point in the ski gear is having the right boots, because like you said, the fitting is important, but also just having circulation. So keeping, you know, warm while you're skiing, a good boot is really important for that.
And when you're skiing, especially classic style, you're moving so much that if there is too much movement in that boot or it doesn't fit quite right, it is going to rub your foot and you're going to end up with problems, which can become long-term problems.
Yeah. A lot of people have problems, you know, in the back of the foot. And actually, I have problems with my skate boots, even on the inside of my foot. So I always get new boots when I buy ski gear, not necessarily the rest of the gear, but for boots, definitely.
One thing I found, if you are an avid skier and you spend a lot of time on your skate skis, skate boots may not look like they're worn out, but you'll actually kind of blow out the box where your foot is held, and it'll get difficult to really get them tight. And then you're going to start to feel pain in your knees and up your leg because you don't have a boot that's really grasping on your foot when you're skiing a skate technique.
Yeah, that can happen. And yeah, I think just every few years kind of assessing your gear and making sure you're still happy and comfortable while you're skiing is the most important thing.
Yeah, it depends on how much you ski, obviously, whether you wear them out in a year or it takes you 5 years to wear them out. Mm-hmm. Once you get one that fits really nicely, you'd want to stick with it.
I know, and I wish they would just make that one forever. But yeah, they usually change things about each boot. So it's, you know, it's good to find a few pair. And yeah, there's a difference between, you know, you have the NNN style binding and the SNS style binding, and both of those style bindings have different boots. And so finding the one versus the other that really fits your foot is important.
So there are manufacturers who sell boots that fit one style, and the NNN, I've been told it's like new Nordic norm or something like that. And SNS is like single Nordic standard. And I'm like, okay,
yep.
get together, guys.
Something like that, yeah. But yeah, it's just these two trains of thought on what a binding should be like. And I mean, they're basically the same, but I've felt that one type of boot fits my foot better. And I've heard that from other people who mm-hmm. like the other kind.
Well, yeah, I've heard that some manufacturers sell a boot that's sort of for a wider foot or mm-hmm. for a taller foot, others for a narrower foot. And if you go to a high-quality ski shop, they're going to be able to tell you sort of, okay, here's your foot profile, here's how it looks. This is the sort of boot that you probably want to be in as far as a Nordic boot.
Yeah, and then if you go to the ski swap and you know what you're looking for, that's great.
Sure, if you're experienced, mm-hmm. yeah, and you've been through it. So do you sell much backcountry gear as well at the swap?
Yeah, it's kind of a limited backcountry. So, you know, for touring is what I would see it as. We do have a lot of different things that come in. So there are some Alpine gear setups that come in. But yeah, the backcountry, like, you know, wider skis, some metal edge, some no wax skis, and then the heavier boots do come in.
All right. So I was holding off talking to Eric because Eric is highly trained in terms of getting your Alpine boots to fit perfectly. And let's first talk about why that's important, Eric. We talked about why it's important with Nordic skis when your foot is moving around a lot. Typically, if you're skiing at Alyeska, your foot is going to be strapped down to the ski front and back. So it's not so much that you're stepping up and down on it, but it's sort of your main connection with the snow, right?
Exactly. Yeah. If you don't have a boot that fits properly, you're going to be sliding around most likely inside the boot, which is why a lot of people will feel that their boot that's maybe a size too big they got at Sports Authority or REI, that they're actually getting pain in the toes. They think they need a bigger boot. What happens is with that little bit of extra room in front of the toes, you'll be sliding the toes forward every time you get in the back seat or every time you hit a bump. And what you want to do is get a boot that fits directly heel to toe that's tight enough. And we don't like to use the word tight too much because people frown at that. So we use snug or firm handshake fit. But you want solid contact around the foot. When you stand up straight in the boot, you want the toes hitting the end. And just at the end, you don't want them curled over. But just at the end, once you buckle them up, when you step into a boot and it's not buckled, especially three-piece boots, your foot's going to be kind of crammed in the end if it's the right fit. Once you buckle that boot up, it pulls your foot back off the boot, off the front of the boot. And that's what you want to feel.
So before it's buckled, you know nothing.
You know nothing, exactly. Okay. If it feels really comfortable when it's not buckled and your foot is in it, it's probably the wrong boot for you.
Interesting. So, with Nordic skiing, sometimes it's super cold, sometimes it's warm. The boots have almost no insulation, so you have to think a little bit about socks and foot warmers. But with alpine boots, it seems like the boots are so warm, that's not really a factor very often.
Warm could be, yes, if you have the right liner or if it is the right fit. Say you have the right footbed, right sock, everything. The boot will be warm. There are a lot of ways that people get cold feet in alpine skiing, and one is by wet liners from the previous day freezing, and that just becomes ice around your foot, which can get cold. Obviously, a plastic boot gets pretty cold at cold temperatures, but there are a lot of ways around that, and a big misconception is stuffing a thick sock into a boot that fits properly is going to make you warmer. Right. But really, it's going to cut off circulation and make you colder. So we see people come in all the time with real thick socks, and it might be the right boot for them, but it's killing their foot because it's just not enough room for blood to move around in there.
Right. That's what I was thinking. Like, you really need to wear the same sock every time if your boot fits perfectly, or it's not going to fit when you put on a thicker sock.
Exactly, yeah. And maybe a year or 2 years down the road, once you get some days in the boot, it will pack out where you can maybe get that next level of thickness in a sock, but you never want to be rocking Costco socks in a boot just because they feel like a warm wool. It's not going to be the right sock.
Right. Actually, those cheap thick socks aren't as warm as the thinner smart wool ones anyway.
Merino.
So how do you size up somebody to get them into exactly the right boot? I mean, walk us through the process a little bit.
Well, so a lot of people will call over the phone and say, hey, my son needs a new boot and he is a size 10. Do you have any in his size? Well, see, a size 10 skate shoe, a size 10 running shoe, a size 10 ski boot. It's all different sizes, especially anyone who plays hockey understands or figure skates. Hockey skate or a ski boot is not going to be very functional if it fits like a tennis shoe. So if people want to get the same size boot that they are in a tennis shoe, it's not going to be functional at all. You're going to be maybe comfortable in the bar afterwards, but you're not going to be comfortable on the mountain. So the way we do it, there's kind of a general rule of thumb, is gets a little complicated, but in Mondo sizes, you can talk 24 and a half, 25 and a half, that kind of size for a ski boot. Well, if you add those two numbers, so 24 and a half, you'd add the two and the four, that's a 6.5. Well, that's probably going to be on a normal shoe size 7 or 8.5 women's shoe or men's shoe. And so you kind of, there's a conversion to do on it, and it's definitely doable. So when you're going to the swap, don't just buy a boot that is the same size as your tennis shoe because it's too big.
Okay. I mean, basically you're going to, you need to, as you said, put the boot on, snap it shut, and then, it needs to feel snug, but obviously not be uncomfortable. It's got to snap shut well. I mean, what is the feel you're going for?
Well, if you spend enough time in the boot, which is, you know, 5 to 10 minutes with a pair of boots on, walking around, flexing around in them, you'll be able to feel, okay, I'm losing circulation, I'm getting a little pinching here. There are ways to alleviate that pain. Some people that pronate a lot, when they put weight down on their foot, they're going to feel pressure.
Define that word for us.
Pronate is, so if you're looking down at your foot and you put weight on it, your ankles roll inward. And what that means is that the exterior of your foot is going to push into the plastic. The inside ankle is going to be feeling some pain. It might not right away because the liner is giving you cushion, but over time, that's going to be somewhere where we can mold the shell later. The biggest thing with that is getting arch support. Arch support is huge in ski boots. In shoes, it's important as well for a lot of people. But if you're in a ski boot that you spend a decent amount of time in, get some support in there. Usually if you ski over 10 days or 5 days a year, you got to have some sort of support.
Is that an insert, or does that mean the boot is designed that way from the beginning?
No, that's an insert. That's something that's always either custom or slipped in afterwards. Superfeet makes a great trim to fit. We sell two different types of customs that we make for customers, and that's how we guarantee our boot fits in the shop. So if you come in looking for a boot, we'll sell you something off the floor, but it's going to be not nearly as performance driven as something if you do get something under your arch and supporting that foot while you're driving the ski. So we guarantee the fit by saying, listen, if you buy a boot and a footbed, we guarantee this is going to be the right fit for you. If there's any issues, you bring it in, we'll take care of you.
Mm-hmm. So do you, I've seen these boots where, and I don't know if they still do this, but where they actually will heat the boot so that it fits like perfectly to your body. Is that a sort of a higher end product?
They are higher end. Salomon is now making some better price point stuff with that custom shell technology that's been around for, I think, 6 or 7 years where they first came out with the moldable shell technology. Now they have the entire plug of the boot is moldable. We sell them without molding them if it's the right fit for you. You don't need to mold it. But down the road, if there is pain, you can heat the entire shell up. Atomic came out with a boot this year that is custom moldable as well, the Hawk series. And it's really a nice way to fit people's feet if, say, they do have a bone spur, a little bit of calcium deposit from an old race boot or something that they want to make room for.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, every plastic boot is custom moldable. You just need to take it to a shop that does that.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of heating it up and getting it to it doesn't have to be a special one. It's just...
It's just any plastic. Yeah. You can't do it on your foot always,
yeah.
Like the custom shells, because it gets moldable at a lot lower temperature. Whereas if we were to, you know, work on an older boot that maybe you've grown a bone spur and you want to get that taken care of, instead of having surgery like you're talking about, you can heat the shell up just in that spot. And we have many tools you can stick in the boot and stretch just a little portion out of it.
Interesting.
So, Eric, if I go to the ski swap and I buy the wrong boot for me, can I go to you guys and can you fix that boot?
You can. If it's the wrong boot altogether, it's going to be a waste of time and energy, and we'll probably tell you that, but there's definitely ways to make a boot that's not ideal work. And if there's not, then, you know, we'll also be honest with you about that. However, there's a lot to getting in the right boot off the bat. Some people have feet that you need to just punch right off the bat, punch the plastic off the bat, because there's no boot that's going to accommodate a certain type of bone spur.
Interesting. So what price, let's talk about how much gear costs new for a minute, just so that people can get a sort of a contemporary or current sort of perspective on this. Like, Eric, talk about, like, if you have got somebody who's coming in, they're sort of, they know how to ski, but they're sort of lower intermediate, how much they should be spending for boots and skis, and then somebody who's sort of a higher level, more of an expert skier. So we just get the range.
Okay. So in our shop, we carry nothing really below the mid-range level just because, like I said, we want people to be set for 5 years and not ski out of it in a year.
Mm-hmm.
So for boots, you're looking at around that $400 range starting off for adults. And skis, you're looking probably about the same, upwards of $550, and that's going to be something that you can progress on and ski for a lot more years. There's definitely better deals as far as price go that you can go find at Sports Authority and get, you know, the bargain ski binding package for $300. But is that something that you're going to be wanting to ski on for 5 years, or are you even going to like the sport enough that way that you want to ski for 5 years?
Right, right. And then at the top of the line, what are people spending these days?
For boots, top of the line retail boots are around $800 to $900. They don't have to be. It's all dependent on the shape of the foot and the stiffness of the boot. Some of the best skiers don't like a real stiff boot. But then again, if you grew up racing, you're going to appreciate a stiff plastic shell. So that's when the price goes up, is the density of the plastic.
Oh.
And then for skis, again, if you're going a lot faster and getting that kind of metal core, the price usually goes up. But top end skis are about $750. The MSRP can be upwards of $850 or $900, but usually you can find them a little cheaper.
Let's talk about cross country skiing.
Oh, well, that will be pretty rough quotes since I am not really that up to date on prices. For skis, a good pair of skis would be about $200. And then there's a range there, you know, between 150 and 200. And then very, very good skis can be much more, but that would be for elite racers.
$600 or $700.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the World Cup chosen pair of skis.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't worry about that personally. For boots, they'd be about in the range of 200 as well. There's a racing style boot that is much more minimal in terms of insulation, but it's, yeah, the lightest, fastest boot. And then it decreases from there, and you have your classic, your skate, and then your combi boots. So you could just buy one pair of boots to fit both your classic and your skate pair of skis.
Although I personally don't think that's a really good plan. I mean, in line with what Eric's saying is, are you really going to enjoy this sport? Mm-hmm. I think the combi equipment tends to be not that great for either classic or skate skiing. And so you may not enjoy it that much,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you get a really nice pair of skis that is designed for the technique you're doing and it works great, it's going to be a lot more fun quicker.
Oh, yeah, that's very true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about the sizing up the quality of the stuff you find at a swap. As we've said, sometimes stuff looks okay sort of at a superficial glance, but maybe turns out not to be. Now, when we're talking about cross-country skis, you can kind of look at the base and see, are they all torn up, right?
Yep.
And maybe if they're really bad, somebody wouldn't even bring them to the swap.
Right.
So that would be step one. What else should you be looking for, Tamara?
I would check out the binding to make sure that the mechanisms are working and to make sure everything's tight on the ski.
And if a binding pulls out of a cross-country ski, it could be maybe put back on once, but after that, you're pretty much throwing the ski away. So if it was not fully attached, if it wasn't firm on the ski, I wouldn't buy it, period.
Yeah. I've taken back skis a couple times to get the bindings moved on the ski, actually, when they re-drill it in. But yeah, after that, there's not really much else you can do except duct tape it on your foot. and then other than that, for the ski itself, yeah, I think the base is really the most important part.
Mm-hmm. And the sort of the lamination or the connection of the P-Tex on the ski to the ski.
Yeah, and it is hard to tell the inside because, I mean, skis, you know, I did have a friend who bought a pair of skis from a ski swap and they actually broke soon after he bought them. He was a new skier, so maybe he brought it on himself. But, you never know what the interior is really looking like.
That's something we didn't mention, actually, is if you were a beginner skier and you bought one of these $700 skis, it's a good chance you're going to break them because they're so light, they really are easy to break. Mm-hmm. And so you're better off with a less expensive ski when you're just starting out. There's no sense in wasting your money on a super high performance ski, although they're really fun to ski on if you do have that technique.
Fun to demo for sure. And I would also be careful of giving those really fast pairs of skis to high school boys because they also are notoriously not so good with their equipment.
With my older son, I ended up he had to ski on aluminum poles because I was so sick of having him break poles. Yep. It gets very expensive and poles can be expensive. I imagine you probably don't get too many poles. Or do you?
Oh, yeah. We do. There's quite a range. You do have, you know, different styles of pole. And, yeah, the aluminum ones will bend and not actually break. But then the composite ones will actually snap pretty easily until you get your technique down. So, yeah, that's something good to think about.
Mm-hmm. But then when you get to be a better skier, those lightweight poles are amazing.
Oh, yes. Especially for long distance skis.
Yeah. I would bet you wouldn't find too many of them at a swap, though.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And if you do, then you're really lucky if you got one of them.
Yeah, really. Eric, how do you, what do you look for in skis to make sure that they're still, you know, that you're getting a good deal in terms of something that's not worn out, in other words?
It's very similar to Nordic, where you look at the bases of them. If there's a lot of what we call core shots, where there's gouges down to the core, or if it looks like there has been and they've been filled, if there's a bunch of those, definitely be wary. If you see a lot of hole patterns in the top of the ski, so there might be a binding on the ski or it may not be a binding on the ski, but either way you see other holes punched into it but maybe plugged up, that's going to make it very difficult to mount to your boot. So if you do have to do a remount or find a binding to put on the ski, finding a hole pattern in between all those other hole patterns that have already been on there can make it difficult. Simply flexing the ski is a good way to do it, or asking someone that knows to kind of give it a good flex and see. You can get a great ski that's very skied out and it's just a noodle, and some people like skiing on noodles, but others are looking for something to go carving on and it's completely skied out because the last guy was 230 pounds and skied it for 5 years.
Right. So let's talk about that. And that's relevant in a cross-country ski too. So as a ski gets older, it's going to lose its stiffness and it's not going to perform anything like a new ski.
Exactly. Exactly. That camber gets skied out and it skis more like a flat camber rather than having that pop and snap into turns that you want when you're carving down a hill.
How would you evaluate that when you're at the swap? I mean, what's the, you just sort of like feel it?
Yeah, just flexing the ski or kind of putting them again base to base and looking at how much camber's left, and then you can pinch them together. Mm-hmm. And if it's real super easy to pinch, it's probably a pretty skied out. If there's a little bit of resistance on your fingers, then it's still got a little bit of pop to it.
And I guess if a ski looks really old, then it's a lot more likely to have that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Tamara, camber is super important in cross-country skis too, though it lasts a long time.
Yeah, actually for cross-country skis, it will last for quite a while. I actually mentioned earlier that I have been skiing on my skis from 8th and 7th grade, so that was a decade ago. And, you know, they're still great skis just to use when I'm not racing and when I just want to get out and go at the beginning of the season and at the end of the season. But it's the same way for measuring the camber at the swap, is you put them base to base and kind of you can feel that flex in there, and that's where your weight is important for determining that ski. So you do want some flex for both style skate and classic.
What about bindings, Eric? How do you evaluate whether the binding is any good?
So as far as from the tech standpoint, if you see a binding that is looking like it's had a lot of days on it, or might look like you remember seeing bindings in the 90s looking, probably not worth purchasing unless you just want the ski for it and you can pull the bindings off. There's a certain amount of years that techs are not allowed to touch bindings after, so companies will not say they will not warranty them as being safe anymore, just because the binding takes all of the torque. You know, the ski gets flexed, the boot gets flexed, but the binding is what holds the two together, and if the binding's not functional, it's not something you want to bust on the hill.
Oh yeah, so you're really shop for the ski, I would say, and then take the ski to a shop and have them evaluate the binding, set attention to the binding and all that. Unless you're yourself a ski tech, and then they can tell you if you need to replace it.
Exactly,
because you don't want to be messing around with that.
No,
yeah, that's dangerous. What about just sort of like the? Is there an issue with making sure that the base is fully bonded to the ski? I mean, is that something that wears out, or is that not?
I suppose that would be something like a
sort of delamination
issue. So if, again, that's going to take flexing it or just looking at the sidewalls and making sure everything's in contact, making sure there's no cracks. A lot of times you can see a crack in a ski if they were, you know, fell off the roof of a car or, you know, just hit real hard in the park. And you don't want to see any cracks in the sidewall. It's not something you can just super glue and take out on the hill, because that snap can go all the way through the core, and next thing you know it, you're doing a tram lap and the ski breaks in half.
So that's a really good tip. Yeah, so when you get buy your new ski that you're excited about at the swap, take it to a shop, take it to have them take it in the back room, tune it up, you know, examine it, check out the bindings, make sure it's safe to use. Would you guys do that at your shop?
Yes, we do it all the time.
All right, excellent. Tamara, I haven't given you an opportunity to talk about trail pins and how the Nordic Ski Association actually stays in business.
Oh, that's a great thing to talk about. So yeah, we are the Nordic Skiing Association, and we were started in 1964, actually. This is our 50th year. And we are supported a lot by our members. So to be a member, you buy a trail pin, and it just means that you are a cross-country skier in the community and you take care of the trails, and you know that the only way that we can have grooming for, you know, hundreds of kilometers of trails is by having people go out and do it with the piston bully.
Yeah. And so buy your trail pin and don't wait until it snows.
Exactly. Yeah. And the registration's already online. So if you go to our website at anchoragenordicski.com, you can register to be a member. And that's where you can sign up for all of our programs.
And Junior Nordic sign up, has that started?
Yes, it has.
If you want to do it, folks, get on there quickly, because it sells out. And it's really disappointing for your kid when it turns out you can't get them into Junior
Nordic. Exactly. Yeah. Second session's almost full. So first session, that's still a lot of openings. So
any predictions on first snow? Or do we not want to jinx it?
Oh, I don't want to jinx it.
Yeah?
Cool and cold is okay for a little bit, so we can get some pond hockey in, but then if it starts dumping around, I don't know, end of October, I'll be happy.
Yeah, yeah. When we get a snow on Halloween, that's always good. All right, thanks. I want to thank Tamara Kornfeld from the Tamara Kornfeld, I've said it wrong a number of times, from the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage, and Eric Helmbrecht from the Powderhound Ski Shop down in Girdwood. Thanks a lot for being with me, guys. It was really interesting. Next week, we're talking about babies in the elements. That's right, getting your young ones outside safely and having fun and having the right gear. And we've got a couple of great guests to talk about that, so tune in. Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. Our producer is Monica Goki. I'm your host, Charles Woolforth, and I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.